Hi, everybody, and welcome to the RuPaul's Drag Race Recap here on Reality TV Wrap-Ups. My name is Mike Bloom. I'm back, bitches, talking about this week's episode of RuPaul's Drag Race, but I am not alone. I'm joined by two familiar voices that you heard last week. First, the queen that helped bring everything together last week. She has now not been relegated, but she will always serve as my side piece. Brent Wolgamott, how you doing?
How you doing, Mike? Nice to hear your voice, as always.
I
didn't have a joke there. I was just being funny.
dripping with sarcasm as much as a green paint dripping off of Alexis Michelle's body.
Yeah, wasn't that something? We're going to get to that.
But we are also joined by someone who graced us with her presence last week. It's Lita. Don't call me Liana Brillman. Lita, how's it going?
It's good. I'm so happy to be spending Mother's Day with my podcast Drag Mothers.
Yes.
I don't think I ever in my life had thought that my name would be equated with the term drag mother, but you know what? Stranger things have happened. I'm so happy to be in there. And also just a blanket message to all the mothers and drag mothers out there. Happy
Please don't
Mother's
listen
Day.
To
That's
this.
When we're recording this. Yeah, absolutely. We know how many drag mothers are listening to this, hopefully. But we are going to be talking about this week's episode is the return of the RuPaul's Roast. We have a reading is fundamental challenge as well. So it is a shady ass episode, and we are going to break it all down, culminating in the boot. Some might say the euthanization of our RuPaul's Drag Race season 9 puppy, Pheromone. It was a hell of an episode. Let's start right at the beginning, getting back from Aja's elimination. We got two big, I'd say, elephants in the room, which are the fact that two queens haven't won yet, Peppermint and Pheromone. Brent, as a big super fan of the show, do you agree with the queen's sentiment that at this point in the competition, if you haven't won something, what the hell are you doing here?
Mostly. I do think that there have been queens who have come on late. Jinx Monsoon comes to mind. Like, I didn't even know Jinx was on the show for like the first 5 episodes. And then I was like, oh, here you are. You know, so that happens occasionally. Violet Chachki, even though she did, I think she won the first challenge on her season. She was also somebody that sort of grew on me as the season went on. So I do agree with her for the most part that, you know, if you want to impress RuPaul, you at least need to have a win at this point. Pheromone was never somebody who I saw as a potential winner. Let me be clear. I never really have seen Peppermint as a potential winner, but I'm not necessarily on that train anymore after this episode. In fact, there are a couple people that changed my minds with this episode, and we're going to talk about
it. Lita, how did you feel about that confessional and echoing Brent's sentiments as well?
Yeah, I mean, not only has Farrah not won a challenge, I don't really remember her even being in like the top half for anything.
She hasn't been. Yeah, she hasn't even been in the top.
So yes. I think you can definitely, if not win, you can be a finalist or a standout without winning a challenge at this point. But you can't be in the bottom half or the middle. You can't just be safe every single time. And when you do get critiques, it's because you're in the bottom half. Like, she's never even gotten any positive critiques.
So, I mean, the previous instances aside, when you hear this confessional from a reality TV fan perspective, are you thinking that Peppermint and Farrah are going to be in trouble? Or do you think, like we see in the episode, one will do well and one won't? Or you think they'll both do well? Did you have any initial prognostications, Lita, watching this whole first segment, which basically revolved around the fact that these two have not done anything as of yet?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because, you know, it's easy to read this as like, oh, well, Peppermint is narrating this, so probably she's going to win and Farrah is going to not do well again, or something like that. But it's hard for me to read into anything like edit wise with Peppermint's confessionals because she's so good in the confessional. I think that she's a really good narrator, and it actually frustrates me sometimes when she doesn't perform in like acting challenges or something like that, or Snatch Game, God forbid, because she is so charismatic and she's so good at narrating. That, I mean, if I were the editors, I would just probably use her a lot anyway.
Yeah, right, so I would agree. I would use Peppermint as much as I can. I will say that for me, knowing RuPaul's Drag Race and knowing how the editors work and knowing that there is a bit of a time crunch as far as, you know, they want to do the mini challenge, they want to do the setup, they want to have their very special moment, they want to do the runway and the critiques and the lip sync. I mean, there's a timed issue here that eventually I feel like the show needs to address. But for now, I feel like the editing is being really straightforward. Like, they're not trying to mislead you with the editing. I mean, it's going one of two ways. there's never a universe in which Peppermint was ever going to be safe this episode. She was going to fall on her face like Aja did with the Princess Disaster, or she was going to win the challenge. And that's what eventually happened.
All right, so let's get to the next day. And
oh, no.
The
mini- oh, no, no, no.
You got
no,
something
no, no.
else?
No, we must talk about Miss Alexis Michelle opening up her big fat trap again, saying that we got to trim the fat, which I think is sort of hilarious considering what eventually happened in this episode. But bitch needs to shut up because she ain't all that talented. I'm tired of hearing her.
Well, this is, I think this is sort of Brent's thesis statement for the rest of the episode, I'm assuming, because I mean, I feel like Alexis has really, and again, I'm going to talk about the edit, so I apologize about that, really coming into the forefront in terms of airtime. I don't know if it's, you know, summarily the boot of Eureka O'Hara that this seems to be the shady queen of the season, but I feel like ever since that Kardashian challenge, she has been so prominent when really she was not in the first four episodes. It's really starting to become Alexis as the big villain. Brent, do you agree?
Yes, I totally agree. Like, Eureka was it for the show. They loved Eureka. They knew what they had. And then all of a sudden, she's gone in a flash, and they needed a new villain. And I don't think Trinity makes a very good villain, and I don't think Nina makes a very good villain. So by default, it has to be Alexis Michelle. And she's giving them what you need to give somebody if you want to be painted as the villain, or if you're okay being painted as the villain. I mean, she says such cocky things, like eventually later in this episode, she's like, you know, I'll go first, I'll go last, I'll close the show. You know, I'm so talented, I can do whatever. I don't really care. You can do whatever with me, you know. I mean, like, she's just asking for the editors to come after her. She really, really is.
Mm-hmm. Lita, what do you think about Alexis's portrayal? Because, again, this is going to be a running course throughout this episode in particular, but it seems to have been a habit of the past few episodes.
Yeah, it really didn't. I mean, it occurred to me, but it really wasn't as clear even when I was on last week. I was complaining about how the villains were not super prominent. But this week, they heard me. They were like, you want a villain? Right. Okay, here's a villain.
She was wearing the green paint and everything, doing the elf of the thing.
Yes,
great.
Exactly. So, I mean, in a way, it's good to see. It's definitely more fun to root against someone who's being overconfident or bitchy or whatever than someone who's just whining like Nina Bonina. I don't mind it. I don't love Alexis Michelle, but this does not frustrate me like some villains like Fifi O'Hara or anybody like that in the past have.
I feel like Alexis Michelle is the perfect villain for this season because she has enough talent to be able to back up some of her smack talk.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Mm.
She's not she's not a talentless queen that you're just rolling your eyes at. She's not like Fifi O'Hara back in season four. I mean, literally, she has talent and she could win many of these challenges, but she just can't keep her trap shut. And that's the fun part to watch.
I completely agree. And that's what makes her so much fun to watch. Yeah, no, I don't want people to think that we're disparaging Alexis saying, like, get her off my screen.
No. I want more. Yeah. More. Yes.
Yeah. She's so much fun to watch because, like you said, Brent, she has the attitude to really, I mean, she's got the ass to cash the checks in a way. And as opposed to maybe someone like Nina, who I don't even know if I would call her a villain as much as I would say she's just starting to kind of get on my nerves with this self-defeatist attitude.
She's a Debbie Downer. Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. Abby Maria would coin that phrase in response to Nina Bonita Brown. Let's get to the next day because we start with maybe I think it's the second mini challenge that we've seen this season, but it is so, for lack of a better term, fundamental because it is the reading challenge in the style of Paris is Burning, a staple in RuPaul's Drag Race. Brent, as someone who has seen the reading challenge through the seasons, how did this one compare for you?
Boy, this one was, on a scale of 1 to 10, I would give it about a solid 7, maybe. I feel like it was pretty good. Valentina was the clear winner. On the other hand, she was the one that they showed the most reads of. So I feel like in the past that they would have maybe hidden who was the winner of the challenge because they showed everyone's reads. But I think like most queens got like 2 reads in, and Valentina got everything in that she did. So I feel like the show was obviously telling us she was the winner of this challenge. It was a fun challenge. Obviously, there's a storyline that's going to develop with Alexis Michelle out of this challenge. And I feel like that's when challenges work their best, when you get some drama out of them. You know, with like last or with the Kardashian challenge, it was the assigning of the roles and all that. And, you know, is somebody sandbagging you? I feel like there's a lot of fun to be had in these kind of challenges if somebody can get butt hurt like Michelle Visage, like Alexis Michelle.
You're the one now roasting Michelle Visage. You should get on the dais.
No, right? It's crazy.
Lito, I feel like we've seen some remarks about this season across the internet that this season feels like a little RuPaul's best friend race, that maybe until recently with Alexis, as we brought up, that everyone seemed to be a little too chummy. Do you feel like that attitude kind of pervaded this reading as well? Or do you think from what we saw result afterwards that we're starting to strike a little bit of nerve now that we're deep into the competition?
I mean, I think most people handled it really well, but the fact that we even had to deal with multiple people not really being good sports about it, either reading or being read, like Farrah being like, oh, I'm too nice for this, and Alexis getting her feelings hurt. It just is a sense of, like, I don't know that I want to say entitlement, but these queens just have an idea that they can just, like, communicate with each other and, like, solve all their problems, and they can, like, step around anything that makes them uncomfortable just because they have this close bond and can share things with each other. And that's no fun. But other than that, I mean, I thought it was a solid reading competition. There was no one that was, like, a disaster. And I feel like normally we have the, like, silence after a comment or like
right.
some dodo music or whatever, and we didn't really have any of that.
Yeah, we usually have the Fifi O'Hara terrible reading and then Sharon saying Fifi sucked. Okay, but there was yeah, there or, was none of that this time.
What was it, like Ganja Estranja saying like Bianca Taco Del Trio, just like either it goes like really bad or they just do the weirdest reads that go off into the troposphere of
right
absurdity.
And then they do that very fun sound effect on RuPaul's Drag Race where it's like
yes
yeah like some sort of weird like marimba like incident. Yeah, speaking of Laganja Estranja, well let's talk about some highlights and lowlights here. Lita, what were a couple of lines that really stuck out for you?
Oh my gosh, I don't think I wrote any specific ones. I have a couple from the Michelle one that I'll bring up, so ask me later.
Okay, well, I understand her apprehension here because I would not have remembered the reads if I didn't go back and watch it like 10 minutes ago. So
yeah.
I sympathize with you and being able to remember them. The ones that I thought were the best were the ones that were short and sweet, like Valentina's peppermint, you need one. I mean, that was just so good, on the money, five words and done. Also, the ones about Shay and her teeth, I thought were fun. Very interesting that Alexis Michelle came for Pheromone for having Johns. She said, they're not your friends, they're your Johns, and they're called your employers. I mean, that was kind of shady. She was calling her a whore. And then she came for Shay and talked about her grill. So I didn't think that was being very nice if later you're going to complain about people coming for your body and your shortcomings. So that's the reason I went back and watched this challenge, because I was like, what, you know, what is Alexis Michelle being a hypocrite here? And sure enough, she is.
Lots of Jurassic Park mentions as well. I don't know if Jurassic World came out 2 summers ago, right? Because I feel like if it came out around the same time, maybe it would have had some references. But yeah, we got it about Shay's teeth. We got Nina Bonina Brown, Jurassica Parker.
Yeah, that was weird. I didn't understand it. I think like they screwed that up. It was supposed to be Nina Bonina Brown, Jessica Parker, like Jurassica Parker. I mean, Nina's teeth are totally fine. Like, what are you talking about? I don't understand.
Yeah, so it made me like look at Nina's teeth for like the next half of an episode, being like, is there something going on?
Am I missing something?
Is my TV quality off? That I know they upgraded to high def, but am I missing something? I agree with you, Brent, that I feel like, and this is going to sort of move into the roast talk itself, that I feel like when it comes to these comedic one-liners, you want to be as clean as possible in both your delivery and your writing. And from a writing perspective, I feel like Valentina clearly did that job correctly. You mentioned peppermint, you need one. I love the Trinity. I once told you you're beautiful inside and out. I lied, you ugly stripper. Even though in Untucked, she said that she messed up the wording a little bit. Like, it was all in that delivery and the clippiness of those words that really, you know, made it reverberate. I did like Trinity's Farrah, you're a social media queen, too bad you can't get a filter for that personality.
Yes, it's
a little bit of a basic read, but I still think it was fun. I do want to mention Nina Bonina Brown says, Alexis Michelle, you're like a BMW body made wrong.
Oh my.
I believe that Miss Latrice Royale did a similar read on Jiggly Caliente back in season 4. So I'm not accusing anyone of plagiarizing, but I'm just saying the similarities are there.
I mean, I don't know if Lito agrees with me on this one, but I feel like that I'm gonna try to give Nina the benefit of the doubt. And maybe, you know, this has been, you know, that was season 4. So that was like, what, 6-7 years ago. And, you know, people don't remember that. Oh my God, that came from a drag queen. Like, that came from this show. I mean, like, that may have been, like, in the lexicon now, and people have said it. Like, you know how Bianca Del Rio says, you know, not today, Satan. Yeah. And now you got, like, Candace Cameron Bure wearing a shirt that says, not today, Satan, on The
true?
View. And she, doesn't know where the hell it came from.
I think her brother gave it to her for different reasons.
Yes, exactly. So, but she doesn't know the subtext of where that came from. At least none of us thought so. So, I mean, this may be something where Nina picked it up from somebody else, thought it was a really fun read, and then brought it out, didn't realize it was Latrice Royale. Because if you were repeating something that Latrice Royale did, first of all, it's really stupid because you know we're going to clock you for it. Second of all, it's really unoriginal. And third, it wasn't even all that funny.
Yeah.
So we don't think that Kirk Cameron is a huge Drag Race fan. Is that what you're saying?
No. But
I have money on the fact that I don't believe Kirk Cameron is seeing a single episode of RuPaul's Drag Race.
I'm so disappointed.
By the way, biggest fan of Growing Pains ever growing up. I have played that intro 5,000 times, and I would totally sleep with Kirk Cameron, just saying.
Okay. Wow. Show me that smile, Brent, and maybe a little bit more, depending on Kirk Cameron's in the room with you. Any other highlights from either of you about the reading challenge, or should we move to the other shady part of this episode in the form of the main challenge?
I just want to say about Valentina, and this comes up in her roast of Michelle as well, but she, I think, does the best at making her personality work for her. Like, she is someone who, like Farrah, comes off as really, really sweet. Like, sometimes she says stuff that's dumb and sounds mean, but I think she's just kind of, like, young and doesn't know what she's doing sometimes. But I felt like she really made that work for her, because just delivering, even if the comment wasn't, like, particularly clever, just delivering a mean comment in her sweet voice and demeanor just is funny.
Yeah. Excellent.
And, I
agree with that, too. She's so consistent with her character. And I feel like a little bit of it is an act, too. Like, I feel like she's not really that sweet. She's not really that nice. Like, she knows that she's the, you know, you're a Linda Evangelista. Everyone loves you. You're perfect.
You're gorgeous,
oh, my God. I live for that line. I know, right? I can live for that line. By the way, Mike, if we want to move on, that's fine. We can do this at the end. But I don't know if you wanted to open the library for us now. Or if you wanted to wait until the end, like, it's up to you.
No, I mean, I think, like, while we're existing in the building as it is, let's open up the library. So just so you all know, we have prepared a couple of reads for each of us. And
Brent prepared, because Brent dropped it on the two of you on the day of the podcast. So,
so apologies.
Okay, apologies
if some might pale in comparison to others, but that's the nature of this challenge. So we might have some reads for each other. We might have some reads for Liana Boris in absentia. But Brent, as the one who brought this challenge to us, why don't you start?
Okay, I'll go first. I was going to go last because I didn't want to make y'all look bad. But, you know, because I don't want to make anybody look bad. I'm just saying.
No, set the tone.
All right. I'm coming for you. Mike Bloom. You know, honey, your last name, Bloom, reminds me of this rare flower that I heard about that takes 3 whole months to bloom. Or, in other words, the same amount of time it takes Mike to land a good joke. Ladies and gentlemen, we are doing this podcast at 6 p.m. on Sunday. You'll have to forgive Mike. He has to hurry from this podcast over to his wildly successful podcast of Once Upon a... Oh, never mind. You know, as a member of the LGBT community, it's always great to have straight allies like Mike Bloom. And Mike is straight, all right. Straight to the next bathhouse. Mike, the first time I met you, I thought to myself, bitch, Halloween is over. You can take the Joker mask off now, okay?
Ooh.
I know, right? I kid. Okay, look, I'm going to make it up to you. I have a joke for you. Are you ready?
Ready.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Mike Bloom.
Mike Bloom who?
Exactly.
Snap, 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 snap,
yes.
snap.
And that other voice you heard is our fabulous guest host this week, Liana Boris, ladies and gentlemen. Yes.
Too easy.
I'm sorry. I know, right? Well, somebody already took my joke. I'm just kidding. It's actually the legendary Lita Brillman. Legendary, or as Jujubee would probably say, legs and dairy, okay? See, Liana got upset. Or I did it again. Did you hear that? I know, right? Lita got upset while we were in Canada because people kept confusing her like I just did with Liana. But I said to myself, bitch, why are you mad? You're actually being confused for somebody that has talent. Okay, last one. While in Canada, see, I worked on this, you guys. While in Canada, Lita met the gorgeous Ramsey from Big Brother Canada 4. He was so hot, I literally had to take Lita to the hotel pool and drop her in the water because bitch was what? Thirsty. Now, at first, I saw her struggling in the water and I started to get worried. But then I said to myself, Brent, don't worry. Cellulite floats. End scene.
Lovely. Absolutely lovely.
Yes. And I just want to say, before y'all close the library, that I did this in maybe 30 minutes. And the reason I did this was to show you how bad these queens on this episode were that they couldn't come up with roasts for Michelle Visage in a day. Like, that's how easy it is to write stuff. You just got to start thinking of stuff and saying stuff and, you know, coming for people with like a smile on your face. And they just weren't able to do it for the most part.
Well, Lita, in response to Brent's diatribe against
come
us,
for
you
me
got
here.
Any reads?
I do. Okay. Please don't come for me on Twitter. I'm not a comedy queen.
Okay.
Brent, Mama, you remind me of Madonna. You're poised, you're iconic, and at this point, you're most well-known for hanging out with boys half your age.
Yes!
Seriously, Brent, you're so old, I'm convinced that half the crazy shit you say about Big Brother is just because you can't hear the TV. But, Brent, you really are such an inspiration to young queer people everywhere. You've shown that even if you had a rough time when you were younger, you can still grow up to be a gambling addict with a sugar daddy.
Yes!
Ooh, yes!
You shady bitch! I love you! Oh, my God! Yes,
Mike
I
Bloom, you come from a theater background, and you're what's known as a triple threat. A man whore, a fame whore, and an attention whore.
Mike, done.
You're so overexposed. The Cash Me Outside girl is like, girl, chill. But seriously, Mike, I admire everything you do and how hard you work. It can't be easy being the low rent version of Josh Wiggler full time.
Oh, yes. She came for
it. It's not very easy now.
She went there.
And speaking of low rent versions, I'm so sad Liana can't be here today. But honestly, why would you want the generic brand version of me when you can have the real thing?
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
She was Mike. She was sandbagging. She was totally sandbagging the entire time. She's like, I'm not very good at this. I'm not a comedian. Brent, I'm going to come for you now.
And see, Farrah, this is how you do building somebody up and then insulting them. That's exactly how you do it.
It was great.
I don't really have that memory, especially it pales in comparison to both of you. I guess the only couple things I will say is, Lita, you're a college grad. I don't know what you have less of, dollars in your bank account or listeners for the American Ninja Warrior podcast. And Brent Wolgamott, you know, it makes sense that you keep interrupting people on podcasts because there's one thing we know about Brent Wolgamott. It's that you don't let people finish. And thank you. The library is closed.
Officially closed.
Unless Liana wants to come in next week and read us, absolutely, as well. And we talked about this before the podcast. None of us are offended by this. None of us. We vow not to pull an Alexis Michelle. We all love each other. But I think that was a fantastic first session of the
That was really fantastic. And I just want to say, really, like, Mike is totally talented. I actually do love his humor. And Lita was I'm going to swear just for once. She was fucking gorgeous in Canada. So, I'm just having fun with people here. And, you know, the only thing I can pick, I don't know very much about Mike and I don't know a whole lot about Lita. So the only thing that I can pick on is her amazing body and his humor. And that's where I went.
And not my amazing body and her humor, Brent. Come on.
I know, right? It could have been that. Yeah. That was so much better. You guys really did great. Because, like, I dropped this on you today. And both of you did awesome. Lita in particular, you did amazing. I'm so proud of you guys. That was great.
All right, well, let's move into the maxi challenge proper. The RuPaul's roast, it makes a grand appearance after occurring in season 5. Lita, right off the top here, were you excited with this challenge coming back after a 3-season hiatus or 4-season hiatus?
Yeah, I was. And it's something that, you know, you don't necessarily think, like, I didn't think that it was going to come back, obviously, because I have already roasted RuPaul, like doing the exact same thing again, just wouldn't really work. But I love them doing Michelle Visage, and I especially love them not telling her. I thought that was amazing.
Yes, I liked that as well. That was really fun because I really don't think she saw it coming. I think doing another RuPaul roast isn't totally like they repeated the Madonna challenge. So why not the RuPaul roast? I mean, they can do whatever they want. I do feel like, though, that it was a really fun challenge. I probably overstated it a little bit earlier. There were some queens who did succeed, who I was really proud of. And there were some other queens that I was really kind of shocked that they didn't do as good as I thought they were going to do.
Before we went on here, I rewatched the season 5 RuPaul's roast just to remember things. And oh my God, it was so strong. Particularly, when you have comedy queens on, they're designated comedy queens, like your Alaskas, like your Jinxes, even Coco Montrese pulls out the win because she pulls out this random ass character who I think we're going to talk about, that Coco Montrese's orange fingerprints are all over this episode concerning the strategies that people take. But I mean, that was such a strong roast overall. And I still enjoyed this one. I think it sort of pales in comparison to season 5, but that doesn't make it not enjoyable in my book. I had a lot of fun with this episode. I did want to point out something that actually Jim Rosario brought up in the RHAP patron group last week that I wanted to bring up here, because this is yet another performance challenge. And it seems like we have had a wide variety of them between your Snatch Game, your Kardashian the Musical, 90210 Ho. You could put the cheerleading challenge in there if you want to, but outside of the fairy tale challenge and the Gaga stuff, we have had a whole slew of performative challenges, which I know some people might not necessarily want to see over the course of a season. You know, you want to see diversified a bit. Brent, do you agree with those sentiments?
So what are the sentiments? That people want to see it more diversified? That they want to see more like runway challenges, look challenges, make a dress challenges? I mean, to me, that's not where drag is. I mean, people aren't going to pay a dollar to go to a club and put down money to go see a queen walk the runway and look fabulous. I mean, they're just not going to do it. I feel like most queens nowadays, the queens that are successful are the queens that can get it. I mean, Bianca Del Rio is making a fortune right now because the wit that she has and the ability to interact with people is so good that people will just like, here, please take my money. Just take it now. So I feel like RuPaul is recognizing that and knows that people want more from their drag queens than they used to. The only queen that I've been able to see that really has made her look and her sickness, and I mean in the best possible way, her sickeningness, to be her calling card is Violet Chachki. Every other queen is some sort of performance artist, lip sync artist, comedian in some other way. And I feel like that it's just a reflection of where drag currently is right now.
Lita, how do you feel about this idea that some feel there may be too many performance-based challenges this season?
Yeah, it's definitely understandable, but it also just straight up doesn't make for as good TV. So that's something to consider. And also, I think for people who are more interested in the fashion of it rather than the performance, I think maybe a better critique would be, rather than having fewer performance challenges, maybe make it at least seem like the judges are actually weighting their runway looks and how they're judging. Because once in a while, we'll say, like, maybe it was like a tiebreaker for two people who did really well in a challenge. But I don't know. I feel like we don't, when they're deliberating, it just doesn't really seem like part of what they're considering. And I wish that they would.
Yeah, the only time that that's really come up for me this season was last week when Pheromone was clearly in the bottom two, but her Madonna look saved her from having to lip sync because it was just so amazing. You know what I mean? Or was it last week or the week
Snatch
before?
Snatch game.
Sorry. She was in the bottom. She would have been in the bottom two, but her Madonna look was so strong that it was able to pull her out from having to lip sync, because I know RuPaul was coming for her if she didn't bring that runway. So that's the only time that I can really think that a runway has had a severe impact on, you know, maybe somebody staying or somebody going. But I agree with Lita that in general, I wish they was, if they're going to do the runways, I wish they would give them equal weight to the challenge. On the other hand, I do enjoy the performance-based challenges because it really puts the queens out there. There's more opportunity for, you know, there's more opportunity for drama. If they're just walking the runway in clothes, there's not going to be a lot of there. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like these performance-based challenges lead to queens, some queens excelling and some queens failing. And the other thing is that this kind of a challenge really demands that you have an understanding of what's required of you as a drag queen, as a comedian, not to go too harsh, like I'm looking at you, Pheromone, not to be totally terrible like Alexis Michelle, but to have a good balance of humor and grace on stage where people would actually come and pay money to see you. That's the kind of queen that you want to be, and I feel like that's the kind of direction that the show is pushing these queens in.
I mean, I'll amend my bias in that, you know, as I come from a performative background, that's more so what I'm invested in this show. I think if you have listened to the podcast at all, you know that when we get to the runways and when we get to design challenges, I am not the most well-versed in design or fashion sense. So that's not something that necessarily draws me into the show. It's still an exciting facet of it, but not the most exciting in my opinion. So, I mean, this might be me being selfish, but I'd love to see performance challenges because it's at least a way for me to, from a keyboard judge's perspective, be able to say, oh yeah, I like this, I didn't like this. And it also, you know, they've changed things up as well. There have been acting challenges, there have been lip syncing challenges. This is a writing challenge. Next week looks like the freaking Drag Race gauntlet, having to write, direct, and star in your own pilots, which sounds ridiculous. So it seems like there's, at least they're covering different facets of it. So I personally am enjoying it, and you know that we're going to get the makeover challenge later on as well. We're going to get the ball challenge, so there are other challenges that are coming down the pipeline.
Exactly.
Well, let's move into the writing, or I guess I'd say the writer's block portion of this challenge, because after being given the assignment, the queens have a very tough time starting to write on this stuff. We even have someone praying to the Virgin Guadalupe to try to get comedy material out of the Michelle Visage roast. We do get a walkthrough here with Rue and Ross Matthews. Ross's first time in the workroom. Lita, do you feel like Ross's presence was necessary in this walkthrough?
I mean, I don't know if it was necessary for TV, but I'm glad that they gave them someone to help them. I don't know how Ross went through guiding them in the actual writing process, or how influential he was in some of their material, but these queens needed help.
Yeah, the only person that he really seemed to like directly help was Pheromone, and she didn't listen to him. Yeah. I mean, he was telling her this is how you do it, and she basically took that advice and trashed it because she didn't do what he said. She didn't lube up Michelle Visage at all. She just hammered her from the start of the whole thing. So it was fun watching him in the workroom. He's never been there before. I feel like with some of these queens that were having a hard time, and like I said, I mean the major purpose was to have fun with Mike and Lita today, but the minor purpose was to show you guys that, you know, it just takes a little bit of effort to like get the juices going and to start writing. I found that, you know, the way you do this is picking things that you know about somebody, writing a few things down that are basically true, looking at other people's jokes and other people's reads to just sort of get in that frame of mind about, you know, once you're writing comedy, I feel like it comes much easier. And I feel like that for many of these queens, they just sat there and stared at a blank page for the longest time. And they wanted to, and the other thing was that they wanted to get off the stage as quickly as possible. Like if RuPaul said, you know, you need to do a minute and a half set, like they were praying for that 90 seconds to end. Like they couldn't wait to get off the stage. And I feel like the queens that are going to succeed are the ones that are like, no, please give me 15 more seconds. Like I got a little more, you know, and you can do that if you write, and you have to push yourself to want to tell the truth about somebody in a fun way. And there are ways to do that, as you've seen from our reading previously.
Well, let's talk about someone who is definitely in their head while writing, but maybe for a different reason. As was mentioned before, Alexis Michelle is still a little stuck on the comments that were made about her, in particular her body, over the course of the reading challenge. Lita, give me your thoughts on Alexis's attitude throughout this first segment.
This is so tough because the subject of eating disorders has already come up on the season. So this is something that's a little bit established. So it's hard to like, it goes against my nature to sit here and be like, bitch, get over it. But also, like, I was rolling my eyes because at the point where you're starting to dictate what is and isn't off limits, like, I'm glad that Rue shut it down because we don't want the future iterations of this challenge to be the queens all going up to each other and saying like, well, I'm fine with anything, but don't make fun of me for my teeth or don't make fun of me for my weight. Just like stay away from this one thing. Like you don't get to make requests, you know, if you're going to dish it, you have to be able to take it. And it's fine to be sensitive about things. But if you're going to be in this industry where your body is constantly scrutinized anyway, people obviously should have more original material maybe than to make like bad jokes about your body. But at the same time, like you need to be prepared for it when that does happen, because that's out of your control.
Yeah, you have to be prepared for it. I don't understand her point of view here. I mean, she was really hardcore going after Shay and Farrah to a lesser extent. And I don't understand how she can sit there and say, but you can't come after me because I feel bad about this. Well, who says that Shay doesn't feel bad about her teeth? Who says that Farrah doesn't feel bad that people think she's a whore? I mean, I just don't understand where she's coming from. I was really, really happy for this because of two things. One, we got to see Alexis Michelle and her hypocritical nature. Two, RuPaul and Ross came into the workroom and basically shut the bitch down because they said, RuPaul's like, well, so you're saying that it's okay for you to come for other people, but it's not okay for them to come for you. Is that what you're saying here? And there was like the, it was just great. And I loved it that like Alexis Michelle was having, she was trying, Mike, she was trying, Lita, to have her very special, sensitive moment. Like she wanted the piano music in the background. She wanted the soft music, but the show was not here for it. They were not here for Alexis Michelle. They let her have it. And I was here for it.
Well, I want to segue that into a question from Will Holston about that Rue moment and how it sort of corroborates with maybe Rue treating the queens a little bit differently. So Will asked us, is it just me or is Rue addressing offstage non-challenge performance behavior with the queens more often this season? It happened last week when Rue mentioned Aja's tantrum about playing Grandria on the runway. And this week, Rue came up to Alexis and asked her about her hurt feelings that came after the reading mini challenge. Do you think Rue is taking some of these things she isn't present for into consideration when deciding the bottom two? I'm sure Rue has been doing this in seasons past, but am I wrong that the show has been more open about Rue interacting with the queens based on info she gets from producers about what goes on when she's not there? Not saying it's necessarily a bad thing, just something I noticed. Lita, do you agree with Will here? Do you think it's become more and more prominent that Rue is learning about things that happen, whether when talking about the task or in this case, you know, something that happened in the mini challenge, and is using that to possibly inform her ultimate decision about who ends up in the bottom?
I think it's certainly possible that she's addressing it more than in past seasons, but I'm not sure that it's determining that it's influential at all in determining placement. I think it's just helping her, you know, take on things that are potentially holding the queens back, because I think Rue has always put forth that, you know, even though she's harsh sometimes, like she's there for the queens to help them reach their full potential. And it seems like there are a lot of mental blocks this season, like more so than usual, maybe between Nina and Alexis and Farrah or whatever, queens who are just saying like, I can't do it. And so I think Rue needs to take more initiative to address that. I think it's possible that it's subconsciously or consciously informing who she's picking for the bottom. But I think just because it's more prevalent doesn't mean it's necessarily a part of the judging process.
Well, I think I was going to say, I think that the Will is kidding himself if he thinks that this hasn't always been there. I mean, Rue is the producer of the show. Rue is the host of the show. Rue knows what goes on her show. Okay. So even though I will agree that has it become more prevalent on the show, like, are we seeing that more? Are we seeing Rue address behind the scenes stuff or stuff that she's not necessarily present for? Yes, we are seeing that. So that is, it's a little bit jarring for reality TV contestants because we're not used to Jeff Probst asking about something that happened on the beach when he wasn't there to see it or that someone didn't tell him about. You know what I mean? That's not how he does things. So, and I don't remember RuPaul doing this a lot in the past. In fact, maybe there is a situation of RuPaul doing it, but I can't recall one offhand. But again, I have always held that RuPaul knows everything that's going on this show. And I think that who you are from the moment you audition is informing RuPaul about who she wants to pick. Because again, this is not a scoring system. This is not a judges panel. This is not anything except RuPaul picking her favorite. That's all it is. So everything is on the table, and you're kidding yourself if you think that it's not.
Yeah, what I would say, this is sort of going part and parcel with what Lena was saying, is that I feel like, yes, we are seeing these things that are brought up at the judges panel that existed outside of the actual performance of the challenge. But I think it's only because it informed the challenge results themselves. You know, Benina Brown was pissed about playing Khloe Kardashian. It showed in her performance. Aja wanted, thought, okay, all I need to do is just play a bitchy girl. It showed in her performance. Here, Alexis gets in her head about things. It shows in her performance. You know, I can only assume that there's so much on the cutting room floor that has not been shown to us and to RuPaul, but because it doesn't have a direct reflection upon the challenge results itself, they're not shown. I do believe, I don't have the post pulled up right now, but I believe Will brought up a fight that Tyra Sanchez in season 2 had with somebody that I remember Ru was saying like, oh, I had heard about this fight that you had gotten in with somebody, and that didn't affect the result of the challenge whatsoever, so maybe he was comparing that. But yeah, I'd like to think, and this might be me speaking naively, but I'd like to think that it's not necessarily Ru saying, oh, Nina, I heard you pissed Todrick off, this is why, you know, we're gonna put you near the bottom. I think it's, oh, Nina, you pissed Todrick off because you have a bad attitude and it showed in your performance, that's why you're in the bottom.
Right, I agree with that.
All right, so let's get to our mirror talk this episode as well. Our very special moment of the episode, it seems to be every week. This week we go international, talking about Russia and particularly its treatment to the LGBTQ community. Of course, this comes very timely considering everything that is going on in Chechnya right now. Lita, what do you think about this segment?
I think that it's great that they are addressing such a wide range of issues this season. I do get a little bored maybe with it being at the exact same time every episode. They're slotting in, it's time for our serious mirror talk. It just makes it feel a little less authentic to me. Like, they must be having these conversations in other places besides while they're doing their makeup, right? Or do producers, while they're talking about it in the workroom, be like, hey, guys, save that for the very special episode portion of the show. You know, like,
yeah, wait until you're in front of the mirror.
Right, exactly. I just don't understand why this is happening at the same time every single time. And it just feels really produced to me, which makes it feel less authentic.
And the timing is really terrible because it's always right before the runway and right before the dun, dun, dun. Dun, 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 dun. So, I mean, could you shake up the timing a little bit, for heaven's sake? Like, I don't want to be sitting there listening to something that's really important, that's socially important for us to acknowledge, and it is, and there's no denying that, but then to immediately go into something as, you know, trivial as a runway compared to that, I don't think is a good look for the show. Stop doing it.
And it's tough because I completely agree with you, Brent, that I think these are very important issues between the Pulse stuff, the HIV crisis, this, the Russia stuff, that, again, it's very important in terms of talking about this stuff. And I still subscribe to my theory that, you know, this is in being shown on a more mainstream network like VH1. It's being broadcast to televisions of people that have never experienced the show before and might not necessarily know what the gay community is like. So I feel like it's very important. But yeah, it's tough. It's starting to get a little tough where you're like, OK, can't wait to see, you know, what's going to come up this week. That's going to, you know, really be a little bit of a, speaking of Debbie Downer, a little bit of a Debbie Downer before we get into the runway of it all. It's very important. I just wish that they found another place to do it. Or, you know, I like the personal tie-ins as well, but like, I would love to get like a personal story that wasn't necessarily a sob story, to be, you know, quite honest. Like, oh, yeah. Hey, here's the first time I got into drag. You know, I think it's great. Why I love Mirror Talk is I love to get to know these queens. But at the same time, I'd like to know happy things about them as well.
Yeah, some happy things about who is your drag mother, you know, what inspired you to get into drag, what's the first competition you won if you're a pageant queen, you know, why you wanted to be on RuPaul's Drag Race. There's all sorts of fun stuff that I feel like would be compelling, and it's never explored. It's always some boo-hooing story, and, you know, to be totally honest for a second, as a gay man, I mean, everybody, I'll just say this, almost everybody that I know who's gay or lesbian, bisexual, transgender, or queer has some sort of a sad story going up because, you know, back in the 90s and year 2000s, I mean, not everybody is totally accepting of people who are not heterosexual. And it's something that you people struggle with, some more than others. I've had a pretty easy life, I would say, especially my parents have always loved me, but there are a lot of other people out there who their parents maybe didn't quite accept it so easily at first, and they had a harder time with it. So it's something that's definitely prevalent in the gay community. Not to say that straight people don't have their own problems, because like, Lord knows y'all do. But I mean, I just think that, you know, growing up gay is really tough for a lot of young men and women. And it's fun. Well, it's interesting to address it. I just think that there are also times you can address it in a humorous way. It doesn't have to always be so serious.
And we got, I think it was Shay last week talking about, you know, their father accepting them, you know, there's, but it was sandwiched between these cancer stories. And I think it's, you know, we're all in agreement that these are important to talk about. We're not sitting here behind our mics being like, lighten up, ladies. Like, I don't want to come up like that. But those heartwarming stories can be just as powerful and can be really important in humanizing, like you said, Mike, humanizing them and making them more three-dimensional characters rather than like being gay is sad. Like, we need to see some diversity in those stories.
All right, well, let's move to, let's pump up that runway music and let's get to the main challenge itself. Our guest judges this episode are comedian Fortune Feimster and the return of Tamar Braxton, beloved icon to the Drag Race stage. Brent, what did you think about Fortune and Tamar here as guest judges?
Well, they were interesting. I would have expected a little bit more from Fortune because she's apparently on Chelsea lately and has had television background. It didn't seem like she was that articulate. She was sort of short and terse with her criticisms, and Tamar was Tamar. She was there. She had a good time, but I don't think she's going to give any criticisms that are necessarily earth shattering for whatever, you know, take. I feel like that she was a little bit of an easy punching bag for a few of the queens. But again, they all just had basically one joke, which was you're the lesser talented, more annoying sister of Toni Braxton. And there's just, you know, that's so obvious, you know, just don't go for that.
Lita, what'd you think about the guest judges this week?
Yeah, I think we've had a few weeks in a row where the guest judges have been fun, but haven't really like said anything that I particularly remember or bothered writing in my notes. But, you know, they need to be there. It's part of the show.
I will say that, first of all, a couple things about Fortune Feimster. First of all, for the longest time, I thought it was Fortune Feimster, and I thought they just had a lisp. And so I thought it was like the gay lisp, you know? So I'm like, oh, it's Fortune Feimster? Oh, Feimster. Okay, cool. And then who is he? I have no idea who he is. And I did not know that it was a woman until the show.
She's
the
both
show
a woman and a lesbian.
I know, right? Until the show basically told me. It took me back to that time when I was 22 years old, and there was this really, really cute guy, and he was shorter than me, and he had a shaved head, really butch, and I was like, I'm there for it, you know? Like, so I walked right up to him and said hi, and the voice that came out was definitely not that of a boy. It was a girl. So I was hitting on a lesbian, and I didn't even know it, and I was really shocked by that, because I was like, oh my god, like, if she didn't like open up her mouth, like, I could see myself like sleeping with this person. And then I had to confront the, oh my god, so like, what do I feel about gender, and could I have done that? And you know, I mean, it was all sorts of interesting stuff. So, well, watching Fortune brought all of those images back to me.
So you would say, much like Sacha Velour did, that this woman had the body of a young gay man and the voice of an adult woman.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I just want to say, as a comedy nerd, I do love Fortune Feimster. I do agree that, you know, she might have gotten the short shrift here. She didn't get too many sound bites, but it's clear she had a really fun time being there, and you get that great peppermint joke as well off of it. And Tamar Braxton, we'll talk about, I think, her big moment later with Alexis Michelle, and how there was almost there might have been a chance of being a knockdown drag out cat fight going on the main stage if Tamar reacted differently to Alexis's crack against her. But I thought they were fun. Tamar, when was the last time we saw her? Was it the season 7 snatch game? I think
you would probably know better than me. I can't remember. I think it's been a couple seasons. Yeah.
All right, well, let's get into each queen. And since they only had one look, you can sort of, if you want to talk about those looks as well. We start off here with Miss Shea Coulee opening up the show. Lita, do you think Shea was a good opener here?
Yes, I loved this. I mean, I just love Shay in general, but I felt like this was the exact energy we needed. And it's funny because, you know, Alexis Michelle was the one who said, like, well, I'm so good, I can go first or last. And I'm just imagining Alexis opening the show. And I don't know if that would have been better or worse than what she did. But yeah, I thought she was great.
Yeah, she was. She really was great. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. I was just saying yes, because that's exactly how I felt when it comes to Shay. This is the first episode where I'm really on the Shay train. And I know she was
the extra is there, Brent.
I know. Well, because of Untucked. That is what I was going to talk about. So first of all, her performance was wonderful. She really was top three for me. I think that there's a case to be made that maybe she was the winner of this challenge. I mean, I feel like that she was good enough that she could have been declared the winner if RuPaul really wanted to give it to her, much like a couple weeks ago where we thought she could have been the winner. But again, RuPaul didn't give it to her. So, she's somebody who she's like Bianca Del Rio, where she's always in the top and she always is contending for the win. I mean, again, I don't know what they could throw at Shay at this point that would cause her to trip. You know, maybe the makeover challenge, but I don't even think, I mean, she's a queen who's been doing drag for a long time. I feel like she could be really adept at doing the makeup for somebody else. So I just don't know what they could do to trip her up. I will say, like I said, if you guys watched Untucked, she finally gave me the extra that I was looking for because Nina came for Shay. Again, I don't know why. Nina is freaking crazy. She's paranoid. She's got paranoid delusions. She thinks everybody's talking about her. She said something to Shay that set Shay off, and Shay let her have it, and I was here for it.
We were all Trinity Taylor sipping the straw, just looking around at all the drama, because I don't get it either, because if we look at other clips, Shay, from my perspective, is Nina's biggest defender. It's always when Nina's saying something, Shay's the one to be like, it's okay, like, stop saying that. And now Nina comes directly for her. She tries to bite the hand that feeds her. You're going to get slapped as a result. And so Shay went after her. And I was so happy to see that. We'll see if Nina and her attitude might recover after that. But yeah, I don't understand personally why Nina thought that Shay in particular was the one to call out for, you know, what was she accusing her of saying, like, oh, some people were saying that I was unoriginal and
you
not
were,
funny.
Bitch. Oh, this is my whatever happened to Baby Jane. Blanche, you are in that chair, Blanche. Like, I mean, you really were unoriginal in the reading challenge. You used a read that had been done before, bitch. Really, that's what happened. Own your shit, okay? Like, why are you coming for other people when this is true? So I the whole thing, we're going to get to her, but with the grandma, I mean, that was so effing predictable. Like, I could have predicted that this is what she was going to do. She was going to do some old Aunt Esther with a really tired looking dress and gray hair like that. I mean, I could have predicted
one
that.
Week after exactly Shay played an old woman.
Yes, exactly. Oh, God. Yes.
Well, speaking, going back towards Shay, I completely agree that I thought she killed it. I mean, so much in comedy delivery is about the attitude, and Shay had the attitude from the get go.
And timing. She didn't have that like timing kind of thing. She knows how to work a room, and she knows how to take her time and smile and give the people what they want and pause and wait for the audience to applaud and laugh. She knows all these things.
Yeah. The highlight for me was definitely you have more dick in you than a urinal at Dodger Stadium, except they get cleaned up after a grand slam. Just so yes. Perfect. The one thing, and I agree with you, Brent, that it seems like she is so poised at this point to really not have a stumbling block. The only minor concern that I have, I don't know if y'all picked it up, of a small comment that Michelle Visage made about her look, saying it's something that we've seen before. If this starts to become a recurring thing where now we're starting to see the same look from her in future weeks, that could be a point against her. But that being said, she has so many points going for her at this point that they definitely outweigh the negatives.
I mean, the makeup, maybe, Lita, was similar, but I didn't think the look was similar. And by the way, Bianca Del Rio won a season wearing the same dame dress every episode. So I don't know what they're talking about here.
Basically, like, I mean, the same makeup, too. At least
right?
Eye makeup.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, let's move on to Sasha Velour. Now, Sasha going to this was very nervous. She talked about this a little bit during Snatch Game as well, that she has a very eclectic sense of humor. It's a little more heady. She's not sure if people are going to like that. Now, I'll admit, the first 15 seconds, I was clenching a bit. I was saying, oh, God, Sasha, what the heck are you doing? This is not, you know, this is not a Soho coffee house, but she definitely was able to utilize Ross's feedback of turning that into its own sort of humor-filled routine, including a sub bit with this whole Michelle Visage is so Jersey. She also winds up in the top as well. Lita, do you think it was a deserved placement?
Yeah, Sasha, I'll just say it. Sasha's my favorite. I love her. I thought that this was really smart. I talked about Valentina being good at playing to her strengths earlier, but Sasha did a really good job with that as well. Even when her last joke didn't land, even though I have not spent time in Jersey, so I didn't get any of the Jersey jokes except the white flight one, which is the one that no one laughed at. But I thought it was good, Sasha. So even when it didn't land, she kind of played it off well. She didn't just like stand there like some other queens for a moment when their jokes bombed. She like kind of acknowledged it and was like, okay, well, you know, the other ones worked. So I thought it was good. I thought she showed range and she did her kind of like what people were expecting, the analytical big words, and made fun of herself for that, but then also did a more conventional, you know, Michelle Visage is so Jersey blank. So I thought it was really, really good. And the look was perfect for it. And people are always, the phrase point of view always comes up with Sasha. And I think that's such an interesting phrase to be associated with a drag queen. And I'm just excited about what she is going to do with that moving forward.
Yes, I agree with you. First of all, the look was probably, it was probably my favorite look on the runway. And that's the first time I've ever said that about Sasha, because I haven't really been here for what Sasha's been serving. But this was the first time, and I know she said it in Untucked, where she's trying to present different looks for drag. She's trying to give some people something different to look at. And this was something that felt very drag to me, and yet was still very different to look at. So I really enjoyed that. Again, her timing was excellent here. She had a joke. She went with it. She beat it to death. But then she acknowledged that she was beating it to death, which was very funny when she said, oh, I've got more of these. Like, I got more. Just wait for it. And then when the one, like Lita says, she had so much poise. And I know RuPaul and Michelle noticed this. When she did a joke and it didn't land, she had so much poise to be able to say, well, it was funnier in my head. Like, you know, I mean, it worked in my head. You know, what can I say? They're not all going to work. Like, she wasn't embarrassed about it at all, which then lets us laugh about it instead of being embarrassed for her. So she really knew what she was doing here. It was great to see.
Poise is a favorite of Michelle Visage, both the Tenet and the Pads. So I think she I'm so happy about my winner pick right now. I think Sasha really did deliver. Again, I was so nervous about her maybe going a little too highbrow, and that was almost how nervous I was with her just coming into the season, about like, will these wonky performative theoretical elements really coalesce into a drag performance that can really pervade the show? And I think it's been going well so far. I mean, I would definitely have put her neck and neck with Peppermint this episode, especially the look. I agree that I think it was the most polished overall from both a performance and a look perspective. I'm just looking over. She had so many great lines. I love we have an out and proud lesbian comedian on the panel. Thank you, Ross Matthews. I brought up before the joke about how Ross has the body of a young gay man and the voice of an adult woman, basically the opposite of Tamar Braxton. And I loved her setup for Valentina, as Valentina combines the excitement of smiling with the thrill of just standing there.
Incredible.
So like, that, and that's the thing, like, a good comedians can roast themselves, they can roast the panel, they can roast the other queens. Sasha was able to do all three in the set that we saw, so I was extremely happy with what she did here. Let's move on to number three here, the winner of the mini challenge, Valentina. Question for you, Brent. As I mentioned before, Coco Montrese won this challenge by being, was it Rue's cousin from the Baxter Project? And by putting on such a big character, she earned a huge amount of laughs and won the challenge. Do you feel like there's a little bit of a Coco effect here, where, for example, someone like Valentina says, I'm going to try to play a personality, and then the jokes are going to land a little better than if I just put them out as Valentina herself?
Yes, I think that's what she was thinking. However, I think it worked to her disadvantage. First of all, I love this look and I love this character. It was so Chola. I was here for it. I was living for what she was serving as far as the character goes. However, I feel like that she was so good in the reading challenge, okay? And I feel like she would have been better here if not for the character. I feel like the character really hindered her. Like, she was sort of using the character as a crutch, and then the jokes didn't really land as well as they could have. Were they funny? Yes. But this is why she was just safe. This is why she didn't blow me away. And for someone like Valentina, who I feel like is a real threat to win this, for her to be just safe has to be devastating for her. And I was glad to see that it was in Untucked. Mm-hmm. Like, she was pissed that Nina was probably more pissed, but Valentina was pissed that she was not in the top, because that's where she expects to be. And I want a queen who expects to be in the top. And she was that's what she was feeling. So I think that, again, if she had just done Valentina, the jokes probably would have landed a bit with a bit more force. But this character, I felt like, constricted her a bit too much for my own particular liking.
Mm-hmm. Lita, what do you think about Valentina's portrayal here and her jokes overall?
Yeah, I agree that the character did not help her out. Part of it was that I didn't even really understand that she was doing a character. I thought sometimes when people get on stage or they're doing comedy or they're doing something that they don't usually do, they just like have a performance voice. And it took me a little bit to be like, is she even like doing this accent on purpose? Like, the look and the accent weren't enough to be like, to explain what she was really going for. So I just found the character more confusing than anything. I don't think it helped her at all.
Yeah. I was going to say too, also her, character voice, I feel like it was a little in and out.
Yeah.
Like, it was a little like, sometimes it was there, sometimes it wasn't. So that's what made it a little tough. I also wasn't exactly sure what was going on for maybe like the first 10 seconds. And then I realized what she was doing. But fortunately, she landed enough jokes to be able to not be in the bottom three.
Yeah, I wonder if, like what happened with Coco, there was a portion of time that we missed where she's like, hey, you know, I'm so-and-so, this is how I know Michelle Visage, and then jump into it. Because, yeah, I completely agree with both of you. It was really confusing for the first few seconds of like, wow, Valentina, for some reason, now has a really thick accent for the first few seconds. And, yeah, starts calling Michelle like a cochina, and you're like, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I think in terms of the Chola, anything beats Fifi O'Hara's jump in my car travesty from All Stars 2. So it's a little bar to clear. But for some reason, because I agree that I feel like Valentina's performance was fine. I think the jokes were okay. The persona took me a little bit to catch on to, but overall I liked it. But there's this final joke about saying that Ross Matthews is a cute little hamster that says, I just want to shove you up my butt. That made me laugh so hard for no particular reason. I think the reason why is because that's our Valentina that we know peeking through, of like the super smiley, like, oh, you're so cute. Like that poking through with that crazy ass delivery, I think really made the joke for me. So that might have buoyed her into like the top four of performances for me. Just a random question about Valentina from Jackie Stackey on Twitter. Does anyone else think that Valentina seems like a more polished version of Jocelyn Fox? What do you think, Lita? Do you think Valentina's going to keep it foxy for the rest of the season?
I feel like more polished, and also just like actually has a chance to win. I don't know.
Actually has talent.
I'm just kind of hung up on the word polish. That's like not exactly the word I would use. I feel like that's an understatement, but that's a good comparison.
All right, let's get into number four here. Someone else who adopted a persona, Trinity Taylor, the Southern charm worked for her as the starfish
bean. Oh, hi.
All right, Bren, give me your thoughts on Trinity here. Did the Southern charm work out for her once again here?
No, it didn't. And I was so surprised because she's such a bitchy queen and she's so fun and her reads are so fabulous when she's in confessional that I was like, girl, what happened? Like, seriously, she had muy bean at the beginning, and from down she went from there. Like, it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. Like, there was nowhere to go. People often say, well, there's nowhere to go but up, but she proved you wrong because she kept going down. It was literally terrible. She can thank her lucky stars that there were two other people who were worse than her and didn't even have one funny joke, which was the only reason why she didn't land in the bottom two again.
What was that one joke that you thought worked?
Oh, the muy bean. That was the only time I laughed. Okay, so
Yeah. She thought that was the response to Valentina was so the first part was your favorite part of her entire bit.
Oh yeah, that was it. In fact, if you watch the episode, that was the only time the judges laughed at her. That was it. There were no jokes. Again, this is so funny because like two episodes ago in the Snatch Game, she has a confessional where she's talking about, and I can't remember who it was, but she says, "Where are the jokes? Where are the jokes?" That's what she says. And I've seen that gif on Twitter now of Trinity saying, "Where are the jokes?" And again, I'm like, girl, where are the jokes? Like, oh my God, can you not realize this is not funny?
Ugh. Well, she was saying that, if you remember, she was saying that in response to Cuckoo as Sofia Vergara. Could you imagine Cynthia Lee Fontaine doing this roast? It would be like 20 minutes long.
You know what? Before Alita talks about Trinity, I want to say, like, I'm just a little bit bitter that we lost Asha last week, because I do feel like she would have been very, very fun in this challenge. Like, I wish we could have lost Farrah last week and had Aja this week, because I really loved Aja, and she would have been very, very fun. The funny part about Aja is that the whole princess disaster thing, it just makes me laugh every time I say it, that I just giggle every time I think about it. So I think she's better in my memory than she was in actual real life, but I still would have liked to see her in this challenge.
Well, that was also like I think that episode 3 was her starring episode, because that was the volcano look, that was the disaster, and that was the rant against Valentina that we alluded to.
That was the cloud, the desista. Like, everything about that was on crack. I just loved it. Oh my God.
I love it. Aja, you are very sorely missed. Lita, what'd you think about Trinity's performance here?
I try to avoid bringing up too many other shows when I am on recaps, but Mike, I know you watched the challenge. She reminded me of Ashley from the challenge.
Smashley! Oh my God!
Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, all she needed to do was just say at the end, like, "I'm done, I quit, give me a plane ticket home," and that she would have taken Smashley completely.
Yeah, she just looked and sounded like her and was equally as much of a train wreck in their respective scenarios. But yeah, it was frustrating watching Trinity, because we know she has such good delivery, and I feel like even with her terrible jokes, she had like, she delivered them like they were good jokes. If there had been any punchlines at all, and she didn't run a mile in a circle to get to a joke that didn't end up even landing, then it would have been good. She has all the tools. It's just that the material was terrible.
Yeah, they were interesting nuggets in there. Like, she went on this whole rant about how, like, Michelle, you and I both have the same taste in products and plastic surgery. You could cut it off right there, but then she talks about, like, we got the same Botox, we got the same brows, we got the same tux, and, like, you're adding more and more onto there that's really
She didn't know where's the punchline. Like, there has to be a punchline and you stop. And she just, it was just a mishmash of a paragraph, and she didn't know where to put the laugh at.
And then we got like glimpses of the Trinity that we love in the feedback when Fortune Feimster is like, "You look like you were about to throw up," but she says, "Oh yeah, that was the Botox." Like, that's the Trinity that we love. And I think it's just clear that maybe she was in her own head of like, she's really good off the cuff, but maybe that doesn't translate to writing things down for some reason. So I was very surprised that she ended up in the bottom three, because this was a shade filled challenge and because she threw out a couple of fun barbs in the reading challenge. But this might just be the case where the stakes of the challenge were just too high for her, that she really got overwhelmed and as a result kind of floundered, or Bablina the Blowfished. Well, speaking of which, let's move on to the namesake of Bablina herself, Miss Pheromone, getting, oh boy, for lack of a better term, super mean, which is so crazy considering that Farrah the entire episode is, I don't want to be mean. I'm a nice person. And then she just goes in ham, like really, really hard on the panel. Lita, what'd you think about Farrah?
I mean, I think it's hard when someone tells you, like, when it's not your natural temperament and someone tells you, like, you need to be harsh, you need to be shady, and that's not really who you are. I think it's hard to do it in moderation then, because you're not really sure what they're asking for, because it's not part of what you normally do. So I understand why she just went the total opposite direction and took it way too far. But then again, like we said, Ross Matthews literally did spell out exactly what she needs to do and gave her an example of, like, you know, building it up with, I love Michelle, she's great, blah, blah, blah. And it's just not that hard of a criticism to take. I think even if she had done that, it wouldn't have gone well for her, but at least it would have looked like she was making more of an effort. I don't even remember a single one of her jokes because I just stopped taking notes and stared in shock and appalled. Being appalled at
like
her.
Literally, y'all, I want you to know that this is the first time in the history of Drag Race that I paused the television and was like, oh my god. Like, my husband was here and he was like, what? And I'm like, I can't believe she just said that. Like, I was literally gay gasping. I could not believe she did not understand how this challenge went. This is so funny to me because, Mike, Lita, she was good in the reading challenge at the beginning. Like, she was funny.
Yeah.
And it was like, it's just the same thing, girl. There's not a lot here. But instead of having fun jokes, she went to harsh insults. Like, mean insults.
Yeah.
Insults that I was, like, crawling under my couch to get away from insults. Like, I thought that Tamar Braxton was going to come up there and rip her a new asshole. They were so bad. Like, how did you think that this was acceptable? Ah. Like, it was just, it was horrifying to watch.
Well, just to walk through Farrah's routine, because I feel like it deserves some deconstruction. Well, she starts with, like, a botched joke herself, where she goes, the joke is, let's hear it from Michelle Visage's boobs. But the problem is that the audience was clapping over the last part, that the joke didn't land. So then when she says, sorry, Rue, they're the real stars, you get the requisite crickets. Then she then says, you know, Michelle judges a talent competition. Don't you actually need talent to judge? And the problem is, again, it all comes back to delivery. I feel like when you have a certain amount of attitude and, for lack of a better term, sass behind your voice, it becomes much funnier. Again, I'll throw it back to Coco as that character when she's saying, like, oh, I knew Michelle back when she was called Michael. But I think Farrah sort of has this bitchy white girl, mean girl voice that when it comes across, it just is very catty and not necessarily funny. I mean, I think the worst part is, you know, her saying having one song in the 90s is not criteria enough to be a judge on the show. And she says, quote, good thing you've been sucking RuPaul's dick for so long. Like, even just reading that out now, it could probably come off funny under another type of delivery, but just saying it the way that she did, that was callous beyond all measure.
I must have, like, that must have been the moment where I paused again, because I did not hear the sucking RuPaul's dick part, and oh my god, that is terrible, especially with RuPaul in drag. Oh my god, like, no, stop. This made me itchy to watch. Like, I was like wanting to crawl out of my skin when I was watching this.
Yeah, I know. I was totally with you, Brent. I was watching this with my wife, and there were two points with her and Alexis's routine where I just had to pause it and be like, writing down the joke, being like, oh, God. Oh,
like, this is your worst nightmare, isn't it, Mike? Like, to be performing and to get this kind of a reaction from the audience.
I don't know. It's a par for the course for me personally. Maybe once I was reliving the nightmares. Now the library is officially closed. All right, let's move on to some brighter news. Our eventual winner, Peppermint, she was thirsty for the W, and the W she got here with her performance. Lita, give me your thoughts on Peppermint's roasting here.
She had my favorite joke of the whole night because it was so clean and it was so crisp, and I handwrite my notes, and I have been read for this before by other co-hosts, so I don't have the exact phrasing of it. Do you have the Destiny's Child burn written down, Mike?
I believe it was, not since Destiny's Child has a Michelle become so famous for riding someone else's coattails.
Yeah, it's so easy, and in a way it's kind of obvious, but like, it's just so perfect. She didn't get overly wordy with it. She didn't complicate it. I laughed out loud at that.
Yeah,
I agree.
And there were simple, like, puns as well, especially like Rue, all smiles, Ross, all smiles, Michelle, poker face. No, seriously, poker face. Like, yeah, it's a bit of like a dingy joke on paper. But again, her delivery is what sold it for me.
Yes, her delivery. She had timing. She had poise. Again, this is probably one of my, along with Sasha Velour, this was one of my favorite looks on the runway. She was painted for the gods. I absolutely love this look. Her eyes were so open and so interesting, and her hairline finally was not busted. Like, I could not come for this one. This one, I could not snatch her edges. They looked good. The jewelry was something fun that you would wear at a roast like this, at a, you know, comedy concert. I mean, she was everything. And like I said, she may have benefited a little bit from the timing of her placement, because she went after two other people did pretty piss poor. And then by then, the judges were begging for somebody to come up and do all right. And of course, RuPaul's aware of the fact that Peppermint has not won a challenge. And, you know, if I feel like if she even came close in the top three in this one, she was going to get the W. So it was nice to see, and I was happy for her. And you're right, she is so fun and confessional. I think that that is probably the best thing about Peppermint, is that she's so inviting and warm and fuzzy, and she's just somebody that you could go down to the bar and have some drinks with and smile with. I mean, she's just a lovely person inside and out, and that made me root for her all the more.
So a couple of episodes ago, post Snatch Game, we did a buy and sell segment. And I, from what I remember, I believe we pretty much bought on everyone except for Aja, Farrah, and Peppermint. And now two of those are gone. Lita, is it safe to say that we should start buying on Peppermint now? What does the arc look like for Peppermint from here on out, now that she has a win?
I wouldn't necessarily say that this makes up for past failures for Peppermint. I think that it's very possible that she had a great episode and then she'll be back to where she was next week. This was great to see for her. However, I still don't really see the winner or finale potential for her. I do really like her, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree with that. She's just made too many mistakes in the past for me to feel totally comfortable thinking of her as somebody who could possibly be the winner of this season. I'm going to need to see more. Again, this is the thing I don't understand. She is a hostess at her own club. She has her own show. And yet, besides this challenge, every time that she has had to perform in front of RuPaul or the judges or the audience, she has messed it up. She has messed up her delivery. She's messed up her lines. She messed up her lines when she was in the 90210 challenge. She wasn't fun then. She also messed up her lines when she was in the newscasting, the View challenge talk show. So I don't understand. What, maybe she was nervous before and now she's found her footing. I would like to believe that, but I agree with Lita that I'm gonna need to see a little bit more evidence before I declare her top three potential.
Yeah, she's so great at performing as herself, but she just can't perform as someone else.
And agreed.
And it's interesting because there's potentially a lot of gender stuff wrapped up in this, which is that because she is trans and because she's actually a woman, she's not a female impersonator. Like, what does it say to ask her to be better at impersonating someone else? I don't know, but it's just something I've been thinking about. With, she's so great in confessional, she's so great here, but she just tanks it when she's doing a character or an impersonation.
I can tell why Sasha Velour is your favorite, Lita. Thinking about gender and all that. I at least from her future, you know, non-disclosed, I do feel like she did again a great job in this episode. Closing it out with a great happy 90th birthday, Michelle, was fantastic. Yes. Her look was gorgeous. She's had a good week. She was on Andrea Belke's Penn Survivor fan forum the past week, which was a lot of fun. So big week for Peppermint. Let's see if that coalesces into anything moving forward. Moving into our final two queens of the roast, Nina Bonita Brown, or should I say Miss Maybelline. I don't know if she was born with it or if it was just given to her, but she's appearing as Nina's great aunt here. Again, another clear reference to playing a character a la Coco Montrese. Brent, what did you think about Nina's performance?
I mean, she was fun. I thought it was interesting that she drew the glasses herself. That was the most fun part of her, I really do feel like. I thought the more interesting part of Nina was not her set. It was more her reaction behind the scenes when she found out that she was not in the top three. Like, I've never seen a person more upset to be safe in my life. Like, she thinks really highly of herself. And that's fine, because up until the last couple weeks, I have also felt really highly of Nina Bonina Brown, but lately she hasn't been giving me what I wanted, and I feel like that maybe it would. Here's the thing: I feel like she would have been more fun by herself. I really wish she would have just played herself and didn't do this grandma, whatever the hell it was. It was just, again, it felt a little handcuffed. If you're not totally comfortable in the character that you're doing, I feel like it's probably not going to work as well as you hoped it would. Some of the jokes were funny. They're eluding me now. That tells you how good they were, because I can't remember them, even though I can remember most everybody else's, whether it was good or bad. It was just the definition of safe.
Mm-hmm. Lee, did you agree?
Yeah, completely agree. I just the whole time I was thinking, like, I don't really know, like, what we can really say, like, what I can really say about this on the podcast. Like, right? This is fine. She's dressed as a grandma. End of things.
The one joke that I wrote down that I actually really enjoyed was her looking at Fortune Feimster and just asking, "What's your name, baby?" I always love the roast jokes in the Comedy Central roast about, like, you know, this person's here, but we don't really know who they are. Basically joking about how nobody knows who the person is, I think always works. And it did work here. The other jokes might have been a little more hit or miss. You know, I think she was definitely in the bottom four, but I think a joke like that kept her out of the bottom three. Yeah, the painted on glasses was interesting to me because it read a little less makeup and a little more face paint. But at the same time, I feel like Nina kind of walks that edge, that fine line. And I've been really enjoying the stuff that she's been painting this entire season. So I'm excited to see what else comes from her. But yeah, I think it's because she was going for something and it just didn't hit the mark here this week. But luckily, I mean, we're going to talk about somebody that did a lot worse than her. She had people to be able to be below her so that she didn't finish in the bottom for the second week in a row.
Agreed. Right, so
let's finish things off here with a wallop, folks. Alexis Michelle wearing Michelle Visage's favorite color. She tried to defy gravity, but something did bring her down, and that was her roast. Lita, give me your thoughts on Alexis bringing home the roast.
Okay, so a thing that should never have to happen when I'm watching reality TV is Googling, is this person Jewish, to determine whether or not something is anti-Semitic. That is not what you want from your reality TV contestants. Fortunately, Alexis Michelle is Jewish. Thank God. Because she was wearing a Star of David. She was doing this accent. Oh my gosh. This was just so, I was squirming a lot. I just didn't understand any of it. Like, she didn't explain what she was doing enough, and she didn't, just nothing. There nothing worked. Absolutely nothing. I'm not going to qualify anything and say, like,
absolutely nothing worked. Exactly. Because, and the worst part was, in Untucked, back in the lounge, she didn't even really understand what had gone wrong, because she basically kept saying, "I accept everything. I own everything that they said. Oh, but blah 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 blah, and but blah 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 blah." Like, she didn't understand that. She went like 5,000 miles to get to a joke by painting herself green. And by the way, the joke that she got to wasn't really a joke. It was just a word, an acknowledgement of the fact that Michelle doesn't like green. And it wasn't even all that funny. And she, in the lounge, in Untucked, she kept saying, "Well, I agree with everything they said, but I don't agree with that," because, you know, do they not remember? I mean, the whole point of this was Michelle doesn't like green. And I'm like, bitch, that's great, but that's not a joke. Like, that's not a joke. Like, there's nothing there.
Yeah.
Why are you playing a Jewish grandma and you're painted yourself green? And Lita, please explain to me, why is she green and she's Jewish? Have you ever met any green people who are Jewish?
Well, there was an argument that wasn't there a philosophy somewhere that the Grinch was Jewish because he hated Christmas?
Oy vey. Well, I was going to say, I think that she thought that, like, she would get brownie points for, like, being a Michelle super fan, for, like, knowing a lot about Michelle or something. And that's why she did that. She centered her whole thing around, like, one joke, because she did so well in Snatch Game, because her Liza impression was so accurate, because she just knows everything about Liza. I think she thought that would help her out, that Michelle would be appreciative of her going the extra mile to make some obscure reference the centerpiece of her routine. But that doesn't mean anything if your jokes aren't funny.
And it, the whole thing was badly done because, again, I don't understand why she's painting herself green, but fine, let's go with that. Now you look like Elphaba from Wicked, and your face doesn't match your chest, and your chest doesn't match your boobs don't match your ankles. Like, literally, everything was wrong. She didn't contour in. Like, literally, those boobs looked like kiwis that had been cut out. Like, they looked like kiwis. That is what they looked like. And I don't understand why she didn't blend that shit in. Like, what is she thinking? What is she thinking? How could she not think that she's going to get clocked? I'm losing my voice because I'm just like, I can't. I'm so incredulous at this.
And she asked to go last.
Yes, she was going to close the show.
She thought this was really what was going to bring home the win for her. So I'll admit that I had forgotten about the Michelle Green thing. This might be an unfortunate side effect of me binging like six seasons of Drag Race in the course of 5 months, but I know that there was a runway dedicated to it. So I had to have a little bit of explanation as well, because I feel like even if I got it, it's a long way to get to that joke.
Long way.
And I mean, you know, to have her close with her basically making a joke about, because I don't think she was as mean-spirited as Pharaoh was. I just think the jokes didn't work. But exactly. Then her concluding with like, hey, Michelle Visage got slammed by the entire UK men's polo team, like that's not a great way to close out the entire roast. So I do want to bring to the forefront this one comment that she makes during the feedback, because Amanda Fallon brought it up as well. So Tamar Braxton says, you know, I don't understand why you're green, and Alexis replies, do you watch the show? Brent, how likely was it that Alexis Michelle would not leave the stage alive by the end of this episode?
Well, this is where I think I was wondering if the editors maybe saved Alexis from herself because they didn't want any awkwardness with Tamar Braxton. But I have to believe that Tamar Braxton reacted more than what we saw. In fact, the queens in Untucked intimated that maybe she did, because when Alexis said that, Tamar was like, are you trying to start something? Who are you? Like she... She came for her. So, what was she thinking saying that? She was so utterly bitchy that when that came out of her mouth, like this was another time where I gay gasped. Like, I was like, I can't believe she just said that. And RuPaul loves Tamar Braxton and you're insulting her. What are you thinking?
I was clenching for the second time in an episode. One should not clench this much during a Drag Race episode, because I'm wondering if like she was trying to do what Trinity did of being like, I'll be cheeky and like have some back and forth rapport, but again her rapport with the judge was just outright insulting her, which I feel like, Lita, correct me if I'm wrong, it's just a rule you should never do on reality TV, right? Unless you really really know the judge very well.
Yeah, you're right. I feel like I'm just reeling from that comment. But yeah, I mean, you shouldn't clap back at the judges unless it's something like super innocuous or super funny, like that you know will land.
Right, Mike, I'm with you on this, though. I was literally clenching so much that I became a virgin again. I just want to let everybody know. Yeah, that's what happened.
Well, let's close here with our lip sync. So it is Alexis versus Pharaoh. Lip syncing to Baby I'm Burning by Dolly Parton. Lita, do you think Alexis was the clear victor here?
Yes, I definitely do. And I also want to say, I love this song. I was just tweeting about Dolly Parton, like not a few days ago, even. I'm obsessed with Dolly Parton. This isn't like the best lip sync song possible. I think it took both of them a while to warm up to it, but I don't think there's any question that Alexis is a better lip sync and is a better contestant, and there was no doubt in my mind that Pharaoh was going home. It was her time.
Right. Mm-hmm. This is something where, you know, I've talked before about drag queens having a credit card with RuPaul. Like, Alexis has a little bit of credit on her card, okay? Pharaoh doesn't have any credit on her card. Like, RuPaul knows... Yes, exactly. RuPaul knows that Alexis has a little bit of talent. So unless Pharaoh absolutely knocks her out of the park, unless Pharaoh can do that, Pharaoh's going to go home. It's like same thing that happened last week with Nina Benina Brown and Aja. Aja never won a challenge. Nina Benina Brown, extremely creative, fun. Well, not fun all the time, but it's fun some of the time. And she won the first challenge, like literally going away, and has been in the top multiple times. Like, Nina had credit. Aja had none. Unless you blow her out. Like, did Aja win that lip sync? Maybe. You can make an argument to me that she did. And some fans on Twitter have. But she didn't blow her out of the water enough where Rue had to give it to her. So, of course, she sent her on her merry way. Same thing with Farrah this week. I will give credit to Farrah. Miss Farrah knows her words. She knew every word to that lip sync. She worked the stage. She worked her outfit. I thought it was funny that last week in the big hair challenge, she came out and she looked like Dolly Parton. And this week it is Dolly Parton. So that's a fun synergy there. But at least it was a very fun lip sync. Alexis Michelle did win it. She was very, very fun. I liked the way her dress moved during this lip sync and the splits that she did where she ran to the end of the runway and slid. I will give her credit because I know that there is some skin still on that runway from that split that she did. Like, it looked uncomfortable to me. So I'm glad she won, and I don't want to lose Alexis Michelle. She's too fun to have. She's so delusional. She has no self-awareness of how she's coming off at all. And I love contestants like this on reality television.
I was going to say there's going to be a little bit of green left on the runway from Alexis's slide, but we know she didn't put green makeup on her legs.
Exactly.
So.
She didn't paint her legs. Exactly.
I think what I wrote on my notes is I feel like Farrah had the look, but Alexis had the attitude. I mean, I just think it's very clear that Alexis, she's a theater performer. She knows how to act the song in a way, and she definitely just felt more grounded and solid, whereas Farrah was doing her cute little bubbly thing of like jumping around, and again, she had the bob to go along with it. But I agree, Alexis totally deserved the win on this. And so we say goodbye to Farrah Moan to finish things off here. Do we want to eulogize Farrah a little bit? Lita, any thoughts about Farrah as we see her sashay away?
She's cute. She's so young. I feel like that maybe gives her a little bit of slack. I hope that she learned a lot and that she can take it and become a more prolific queen. I have high hopes for her. I cried a lot when her mom sent a video and Untucked. I don't know why that one got me so much.
Did you cry like she did when Eureka got eliminated?
No, I do not want me making up face all over the internet. But I don't know. Maybe it's because we're close in age and I miss my mom, but that was a nice moment for me that I'll remember about Farrah.
Yeah,
Brandon, Farrah, any final thoughts on Farrah?
Well, again, I thought she went out well. She performed admirably in the lip sync, and she really is. She's a gorgeous queen, let's be honest. But I think she was probably cast a year or two too soon. Like, she admitted it at the end. She has a lot of growing to do. All right, maybe she admitted it in Untucked that she has a lot of growing to do. That she learned a lot from the other queens. She felt like she was swimming upstream the entire time because she never once was in the top. She was always safe or in the bottom or lip syncing for her life. She was given a mercy pass when Eureka was sent home because, remember, she was lip syncing, and I think she probably lost that lip sync to Cynthia. So she got a little bit of extra time on the show. Great for her. Hopefully she can use this opportunity and this exposure to better herself and get more gigs and more performances, because she is very fun. I love her personality. I love her moan where she goes, "Oh," like, it's so pathetic. It's like a sick kitten. You just want to like pick it up and grab it. I thought it was very funny at the end of Untucked where she was the only queen that I've ever seen who looked at her mug and said, "This is so sickening, I'm going to keep it on." And she walked out with a full beat on her face. So a lot of fun, but it was time for her to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's gorgeous. She's got that body, yaddy, yaddy. She picked out amazing looks, specifically the Madonna look that you mentioned before, Brent, and her Alejandro look, even though that reveal didn't happen. She definitely made an impact from the get-go in terms of the look department. I think it's clear that she had some weaknesses, but what I will give Farrah credit for is that I think she knew that she had weaknesses. It seems like every time she failed in a challenge, she knew she had, and I feel like that amount of the ability to realize that is maybe something that some other queens that are still in the competition might lack. So I'm going to give her credit for that. I mean, she even admits on her way out, she's like, "Yeah, I realized I was a lot more awkward and, you know, not less talented, but, you know, a lot more timid than I thought I was," which, again, good on her for realizing that. I think this was a perfect place for her to go because, again, we've now eliminated two out of the three contestants that we were all sort of selling on in terms of winner odds. And I think it's still a pretty close race from here on out. Brent, I know you said you had some stocks rise and fall over the course of this episode. Do you agree?
Yes, I think it's a pretty close race. But again, I think that now that she has even won me over, I do think that Shay Coulee is running away with this in many people's eyes. The funny part is that I've forgotten that she was my winner pick. Like, I picked Shay Coulee to win just based on like looking at them, not knowing a lot about them. And then quickly, once I saw the show, I was like, oh, I love Nina. Oh, I love Valentina. Oh, I love Trinity. And I kind of forgot about Shay, but she has really turned it on. And I love seeing her get extra with Nina in Untucked. It let me know that she can get extra if I need her to be, and I need that in my drag queens. So I'm here for her. And I feel like that some of the queens, like Sasha, like Shay, and, well, I'm going to leave it at that for now, are really separating themselves because they seem to have no weaknesses. I know that Sasha did end up in the bottom three that one time that in the Beverly Hills Lana 2.0 challenge, but she didn't have to lip sync. And I feel like she's pretty different from the other queens, so she's always going to have that, and she doesn't have a lot of weaknesses. As long as she doesn't overthink herself, I think she's probably a good bet to make it at least a couple more weeks in the competition. I think Nina Bonita Brown has really dropped for me. Valentina has stayed steady for me. Valentina needs a win or a really close top three. Otherwise, I feel like she's starting to fall back into the pack a little bit here. But I really like where Shay's going.
All right, well, we will talk about those queens and many more as we join RuPaul's Drag Race next week. For now, Brent, Lita, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for opening the library. If you all want to give your thoughts on the episode, if you want to read us a little bit, I'm sure I speak on behalf of all of us in saying that you are welcome to. You can reach out to us on social media. Brent is at One Lucky Gay. Lita is at Lita Tweeted, L-I-T-A Tweeted, and I am at a Mike Bloom type. I know these guys are also working super hard in the realms of reality television. Brent, Big Brother Canada 5 is about to conclude, right?
Yes, we just recorded the roundtable right before this podcast, so you can check that out. Even though there's no feeds right now, there were feeds up until yesterday. We actually managed to polish that turd and turn it into gold because we talked about a lot of stuff. It was actually a very, very fun podcast with me, Alex, and Taryn. And I didn't read Taryn very much, but we had a good time. And we had a great time.
Why, he's so easy to read.
I know, right? We had a great time in Canada. Lita was there. Katie was there. We had a wonderful time in Canada. Arissa Cox was so fun. We took pictures with her. We talked with her. She got us into the show. We were friends of Arissa.
She's
so
the best.
Great. I know, right? She's the best. So it was really, really fun. And we are going to watch the finale on Thursday. All of the live feed correspondents and Rob will be there to cover that. So make sure you check that out as well.
And Lita, I know American Ninja Warrior is currently in what? Team Ninja Warrior?
Yes. We are in our little sister show. So we do some very casual recaps for that. We should have one coming out soon. Taryn and I recorded a live one in Toronto. It was fun. We did it together at Podcast House, so we were a little bit
in my bedroom.
Yeah, so we were a little bit interrupted by some noise. Taryn was extremely rude to me, as he always is. So check that out. It's very fun. I'm also writing the blog recap of Toronto because Sarah Shannon couldn't be there. That should be coming out in the next day or so. So look out for that.
That's perfect. I speak on behalf of someone who was not there in Toronto that, you know, I missed the opportunity to get to attend those events. So I'm going to try to sap in as much content as I can, both from your blogs and all the pictures that have been going around. It seemed like a lot of fun. You can check out all the other great stuff that's going on in reality TV wrap up as well. In addition to the coverage that Brent and Lita just mentioned, I know the challenge is just finishing up. The Amazing Race is in full swing. I actually guested on the Amazing Race podcast last week with Jessica Leese and Dan Heaton, where we kind of talked about the episode, but mostly we talked about our thoughts on the season overall and possible actually ideas for future seasons, which
and
was actually
international
a lot of fun.
Versions of the show. I learned a lot.
Yes, if you want to learn, or if you're a super geeky Amazing Race fan, it's a podcast to check out. But Rob and Jess will be back recapping what I think is a very great season of Amazing Race coming up next week. So make sure you check that all out. Make sure you're subscribed to Reality TV for Hap Ups, and also make sure you're subscribed to the RuPaul's Drag Race only feed. Just search RuPaul's Drag Race Season 9 in iTunes. And while you're there, we appreciate any ratings or reviews we may leave. In general, we're appreciative of any feedback you may be giving us. This just informs us as we podcast moving forward in the season, so we are extremely grateful for that. To finish things off, do we have a hashtag for people who made it all the way to the end of this podcast?
Gosh, I don't know. I was thinking about that. I don't know. Anybody have any ideas? Anything? Throw anything out?
Something about being green.
Yeah.
We have Coco's fingerprints to allude to all the characters that were being played in the roast.
I'll go with that. I mean, I can't think of anything else right
now. Sure. Coco's fingerprints. Yeah, we're all shaded out over the course of this nearly 2-hour recap.
We've all been demoralized by each other's reads.
I thought this podcast was actually going to be really short because there wasn't any runway. It was just one thing to critique. But then I found myself like totally going berserk over Alexis Michelle.
Well, if there's anything that makes a good podcast, it's a good Brent rant. So we're happy to have it. Lita, thank you so much for coming on once again to guest. So hashtag Coco's fingerprints if you made it to the end of this podcast. We'll be back next week recapping episode 9 of RuPaul's Drag Race season 9. But for now, sashay away. Bye!
Bye!